Okay, moving on to the case study that I mentioned, we will have a double feature here, two speakers that will be talking about a case study in Washington State discussing the economic impact of $1 spent on community energy efficiency. And I forgot to mention, to plug our program, that Sustainable Connections, the organization that Alex is with, worked with the City of Bellingham on a Climate Showcase Communities project. So they are one of the 50 that I mentioned before. As I said, we have a double feature, two speakers, Alex Rammel and Graham Marmion. Alex Rammel is the Energy and Policy Director at Sustainable Connections in Bellingham, Washington. He is one of the architects of the Community Energy Challenge, which is a very successful energy efficiency campaign that provides an opportunity for small businesses to be effective leaders in implementing practical and effective solutions to climate change. Speaking along with Alex will be Graham Marmion, who is a recent graduate of Western Washington University, where he served as the director of the Representation and Engagement Programs Office and earned a degree in economics. As a culmination project, Graham completed an in-depth economic impact analysis of the Community Energy Challenge. Go for it, guys.
Great. Can you see our screen now? Are we all set?
Yes, looks great.
Great. Well, just a quick thank you. This is Alex Rammel. Quick thank you to Wendy and Victoria, Emma and Lauren. Thanks for the opportunity to present today. Thanks for organizing this webinar. There we go. So, as was mentioned, I think we're sort of a case study of how some of these tracking and measurement tools can be used in the example of our program. So I'll give a quick overview of how the Community Energy Challenge works and a quick review of some of the metrics that we track, some of the data that we collect. And then we'll talk about what we've been able to do, what Graham was able to do with some of that information in terms of a detailed economic impact analysis. And then we'll talk a little bit about what we can do with that analysis and really about how we message the economic results of our program. So just quick orientation, Bellingham is in the very northwest corner of Washington State. We're about 90 miles north of Seattle, about 20 miles south of the Canadian border, right on the Puget Sound. The Community Energy Challenge started in 2010. It's a partnership between Sustainable Connections, the Opportunity Council, with a lot of support from local governments, the utilities in our region, state government, and the federal government. Our goal with the program is to make energy efficiency as easy as possible. We want to clear all of the barriers to implementing cost-effective energy efficiency projects in both homes and small businesses. We started off working in one county over the last several years. We've expanded now to a four-county region. Just a quick overview of how the program works. If you're a homeowner in the area and you're interested in signing up for the Community Energy Challenge, the first step is to get an energy assessment. Other people would call them audits. We did focus group research that found that people don't want to get audits, so we call them energy assessments. Those cost $200. That's a loss leader for us, but we do the initial four-hour diagnostic analysis on the home, and then we come back a week or two later, meet with the homeowner, and show them the results. Those results come along with recommendations for ways that they can improve the home. This is a third-party system, so we're not selling windows. We're not selling furnace upgrades. We're helping homeowners make smart decisions based on what's on the ground in their specific building. Once they've decided on a project that they're interested in, we help them get bids for completing the project from contractors that we have trained that meet our quality standards. They move forward, again, with whatever project that homeowner selects based on the bid from the contractor. In the end, we provide quality assurance to make sure that the project was done well, and we help connect the homeowner with both the utility rebates that are available And through grant funding, we're able to help buy down the cost of some of the deeper energy efficiency retrofits. Similar process available for small businesses done under the same auspices. Few minor changes, but ultimately for businesses, it's just about the same. So when we started this program, one of the grants that we received in 2010, working again with the City of Bellingham, was a Climate Showcase Communities grant, and we were required to develop a logic model like the one that Emma showed earlier on. And as we once we had received those funds, or once we'd been approved for that grant, we realized that not only were we going to have to, you know, achieve all of these things that we'd sent in the grant application, but we were also going to have to be able to demonstrate that we'd achieved them. And because Emma hadn't completed that presentation for us yet, we actually ended up hiring someone to a consultant to help us develop a series of metrics and figure out how to do all of the data collection and organization to make sure that we were meeting the goals that we had set at the beginning. So just quickly walking through some of the some of the metrics that we record. On home energy, for home energy projects, we track the number of assessments that we complete, and then how many of those turn into projects. There's a little bit of difference between the number of projects completed and the number of homes that complete projects. The fact is some homes complete more than one project is basically the difference there. We track the energy savings and the cost savings that correlates to that from each project, and we track the average cost of those projects. This is a slide about how difficult it is to make commercial energy retrofits interesting to look at. These really are the best pictures I can find of a ductless mini-split heat pump and a roof insulation project. Although they're not visually appealing, we are excited about the energy savings that results. And again, for businesses, we track the number of assessments completed, the number of projects, and the number of businesses implementing at least one project. We also do surveys. We try to be customer service oriented. We track a lot of indicators, but this is the one that I do like to brag a little bit about. When we ask people whether they would recommend the program, what we found is that most people not only said that they would recommend the program, but most people already had. Because we keep track of these numbers, we're able to add these up into environmental indicators, both for the total amount of energy that we're saving the community each year in dollars, or we can tell you in kilowatt hours or therms of natural gas. We can also convert that to greenhouse gas indicators. And because we're keeping track of the cost of each of these projects, we know the total economic activity resulting from the program. We're also, of course, interested in job creation. One of our initial, or several of our initial grants actually, were through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. And as those of you that worked under those grants know, we had to keep track of job hours, and we looked at certified payrolls, and we added up the number of hours of every person working on any of these projects. In my opinion, that didn't end up being a good indicator of the job creation results of the program. And what we found for communication, until Graham came along, the best thing we could do was talk about the total economic activity and just listing the contractors, especially when we're talking with local or regional government officials. Just a list of contractors, like on this slide, they're going to know some of these people and know that they're benefiting from the job creation. So once we've sort of been collecting that information for a number of years, we do have a couple of points. The first thing I would say is that it took us a couple of years to get really good systems for tracking data month to month, quarter to quarter. And those systems, once they're in place, make my life from a reporting perspective much easier. When the EPA calls you up and says, can you do a webinar for you, it makes putting together your first 10 slides a lot easier. And it makes budgeting and future grant requests much easier. My budgets at the end of the year much more closely mirror the predictions at the beginning of the year now than they did at the beginning of the program, because we know what it costs to do things and we keep careful track of that. Those are important values that come out of keeping track of that information and that data. And then it becomes possible to do some deeper analysis, and we've been fortunate to be able to coordinate with higher education institutions, specifically Western Washington University, to do some of those analysis. Last year, I gave a presentation to a class at Western Washington University, located in Bellingham, and afterwards, Graham Marmion came up to me and said, are you looking for interns? And had this project in mind and asked him if that was something he was interested in working on. And he agreed to do it and took on the project. And it's resulted in an analysis that that we're pretty excited to share with you. And I'm going to turn it over now to Graham, who's going to walk you through the results there.
Yeah, so this is Graham. We pretty quickly, or through my economic impact analysis, we identified that $1 spent through the CEC ends up causing $5.27 in economic impact. Part of that impact is in the very first year, like right when the efficiency upgrades are installed, and then another portion of it is spread out over the next 20 years. But the majority of it, it comes up front right at the beginning. And this $1 turning into $5.27 comes from public funding being, or when the CEC spends money on this, they also, if matched by the person who's receiving it, and also there's utility rebates coming in, and it all adds up to jump up the number from that $1 that goes into it. Then, because local contractors are used and local supplies purchased, that money then spreads out into the local community, which then those people go ahead and spread it around the community, or go ahead and make purchases in other places in the community. And then that ends up causing what's called an induced effect, where personal income in the area increases, and so more people are able to spend more money in the community. And overall, it was about 380 of the economic impact. And then because these are energy efficiency upgrades, as Alex said, it's saving money. That money counts as more personal income being saved and effectively a personal income increase for the community, who then goes and spends that over the course of the 20 years as they make those energy efficiency savings. Now, next slide. And this is what that ends up breaking down into. As you see, we've started out with the $1.6 million in public spending from coming from the Community Energy Challenge, and then that is immediately matched by the private investment, leading us to that $3.2 million that's the direct economic impact that's taking place. Then once you add on the gross local impact, which is basically the result of once we spend that $3.2 million, here's that extra portion that ends up being caused by spending that, because the contractors you're purchasing from or hiring end up going out and spending their money in the community. That bumps up to $5.6 million. Then once you add in the future energy savings, it ends up reaching up to $8.5 million over the course of 20 years, and which ends up being substantially more than that initial $1.6 invested. And you'll see where we've illustrated the slightly lower $5.4 million at net local impact. What that is as any good economic impact assessment should do, we looked at what are the alternative situations. Because this is public spending, it is effectively tax dollars. We decided to look at the next alternative being, what if we just gave this money back as basically a tax rebate to the middle class? And we found that doing so would still produce a sizable economic impact. However, because it's not matched by that private investment, you end up getting substantially smaller. That's also caused by people spending more money not within the community, whereas this program directly spends it within the local community. So the alternative was that, the alternative of giving the money back and not spending it on this only creates $5.4 million in activity, whereas spending the money on the CEC produces $8.5 million in economic activity. So it's substantially better to spend it on a program like the Community Energy Challenge. And then you'll also see that we have $600,000 in additional between additional federal taxes and additional state and local taxes. That's money that was that's taxes that were calculated to be generated through the investing of this initial $1.6 million and over the course of it as a result of all of the spending that happens and generates $600,000 in tax dollars from this area. Next slide. Yeah. In order to create this economic impact study, I didn't just make up the numbers. They came from using a program called IMPLAN, which is an input-output model that effectively allows you to describe economic activity to it, and then it takes those inputs and gives you the output of telling you how much direct effect that's going to have on the community or on the economy, how much indirect effect, so effect from those contractors spending money on other businesses, and then the induced effect from general personal income increasing from spending happening, and then the spending that causes. So it ends up giving you output in the form of employment, labor hours, value added, and general economic output. We ended up dealing with economic output and creating that $1 equals $5.27. That was the number we looked at and referenced. And we used that program in order to basically give us those numbers you saw on the previous page. However, in doing so, we did require to have several key assumptions to let the program function. And what we used was a 3% discount rate in order for us to calculate our ongoing impacts, because we recognize that money now is worth less than, or is worth more than money later. So we use a 3% discount rate in that 20 years I talked about for how long the ongoing energy benefits will be basically calculated for. Our cost of energy that we assumed using Puget Sound Energy's basic residential schedule and commercial schedule for electric and for gas. That was basically our baseline there. And we also assumed that, for the sake of the study, that the cost of energy would remain the same and stagnant for the next 20 years. We also, our IMPLAN also required us to make several assumptions assuming where the funding is actually spent. Because while IMPLAN has built into it basically economic information regarding the district or regarding the region selected and the region the study's been performed on, as in IMPLAN is aware of every industry that exists there, it still falls to us to have to ascribe the various expenditures to each region. We also made an assumption regarding the ongoing impact that the utility would respond to the decrease in energy consumption through basically suffering a decrease in revenue. That was basically a worst-case scenario assumption, so we could see what the most negative impact that could come out of this is. And we saw that regardless of them taking this decrease in revenue, it still has a positive economic impact. And then we also ran under the assumption that Washington State's solar production credit would expire in 2020 as it's currently set to, unless it's expanded.
Perfect.
Thanks, Ben.
This is Alex again. And just to discuss a little bit how we have been using this model and how we haven't been using this model, in going to developing this project, my hope was that this would be more like an energy performance model on a home, that we would be able to compare one program to another and figure out how to make improvements based on the model. And unfortunately, that isn't something that we can do with this model. Apples-to-apples comparisons just aren't available for other uses of public funds. We were able to measure the one alternative that Graham described, but we're not really able to say how can we make our program more effective at increasing the economic multiplier. The tool just doesn't have the granularity to be able to do that. what this data is useful for is starting a conversation that allows us to discuss the impacts of the program. So our audience for that is occasionally webinar attendees, but more generally, funders, grant makers, decision makers, budget writers, community leaders, business people who are working with our program, who are funding our program. And what I try to always remember is that as interested as I am in the methodology and the details, is that for those audiences, that's not something we ever really want to talk about. What we want to think of is that these statistics are the beginning to telling the story. They're not the story itself. And so this is the slide that I used in a presentation to the Washington State Office of Fiscal Management a month and a half ago. And the way that I described it, quite simply, is that the program has an economic multiplier greater than 5-to-1. And that's a result of the fact that public investments motivate private investments, and then those public and private dollars both have economic multipliers associated with them, and because we're reducing energy costs, that savings also flows into the local economy. And that's as complicated as I try and get it, and I've never gotten a question in presenting this information. I've never gotten a question asking for greater detail on the methodology or anything else. So that's what I've learned so far about messaging on this. And with that, I think we're wrapped up, and we're happy to take questions and turn it back over. Thank you again.
Thank you, Alex and Graham. That was a really great presentation, and I think the results of your analysis are really great as well. Especially, I like that you, thank you that you talked about how you communicated those results. That is part of our framework. Going back to Emma's presentation, to after you track program results and measure, don't forget to communicate those, but think about how you communicate, as Alex mentioned, in order to be the most effective. That is the end of our formal presentations. Before we start the Q&A, we have one more poll question, I believe, that Lauren is going to ask. If you would kindly answer, that would be helpful.
And in this poll question, we're asking how you've used indicators. So we've successfully used indicators to secure partnerships, obtain funding, increase public awareness, catalyze development and/or infrastructure improvements, or alternatively have not used indicators to gain support or funding yet. Please take a moment to respond.
Thank you for answering. The results are illustrative, I think, of what most people would probably find. It looks like indicators have been used for all of the options, but more so for increasing public awareness and obtaining funding. These poll questions are great for us to get a sense of where our audience is at to help us develop more tools. So thanks again for